Welcome to another edition of what I call American Exposé. This is Chris Gerner speaking to you on the 12th of May, 2005. Time does fly, doesn't it? At this point in time, things are very, very incredible. When you know the big picture in place and you read the papers, you can laugh at the newspapers. You can laugh at what the newspapers are saying. I do shortwave now, thanks to Melody Cederstrom, and that is 3 to 4 p.m. Central Time, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, on WBCQ 7.415. That's WBCQ 7.415, 3 to 4 p.m. Central Time. Then 7 to 8 p.m. Central Time, WWCR 7.465. That's 7.465, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday as well. On WWCR 7.465, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Then Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I do it here at First Amendment Radio. Darren Weeks does Monday and Friday, as Darren does very good information also. We try to do the best to connect the dots. Meaning, I did 2 hours already. I've been covering this democracy and the celebration of the 60th anniversary of the end of war with Nazi Germany in 1945. And certainly I've been covering a lot of that and connecting dots to the fact that, well, weren't we on the wrong side, ultimately? Wasn't this all under the guise of creating a global democracy, which is democracy is just a code word for communism, ultimately, when you get down to it, connect the dots. I talked about the pact in 1936 that Germany and Japan made to fight international communism, the Comintern. That's what they were arming against, if the battle of international communism. I'm certain that Winston Churchill said to Adolf Hitler, yes, go attack Poland. Go attack Russia. We'll back you up. I'm sure that's what happened. He would not have been so stupid to do what he did, the way he did it, if he didn't have the backing of England. And what do I know? And how do we get to the bottom of the truth of World War II when you get down to it? When you really get down to nuts and bolts of it, the nuts and bolts of the whole thing, the United Nations was created January 1st, 1942, and the United Nations was running the war. The United Nations won. The United Nations is in power today. We are the United Nations today in Iraq and the Middle East. We are the coalition. In 1976, the U.S. Treasury was transferred to the Treasury. In 1976, the U.S. Treasury turned into the Treasury, where the U.S. governor of the IMF is the Secretary of Treasury and receives no compensation from the United States, which is a federal corporation. The IMF is the United Nations. We are henceforth the global cop for the United Nations in 135 countries throughout the world for the UN system. In the meantime, and I do this quite often now, because it's most imperative for you to research for yourself, Title 50, Chapter 23, Subchapter Roman Numeral 4, Section 841, entitled Findings and Declaration of Fact. The Congress finds and declares that the Communist Party of the United States, although purportedly a political party, is in fact an instrumentality of a conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States. This is not conspiracy theory, listeners. This is Title 50 of the U.S. Code. It constitutes an authoritarian dictatorship within a republic, demanding for itself the rights and privileges accorded to political parties, but denying to all others the liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. Unlike political parties, which evolve their policies and programs through public means, by the reconciliation of a wide variety of individual views and submit those policies and programs to the electorate at large for approval or disapproval. The policies and programs of the Communist Party are secretly prescribed for by the foreign leaders of the World Communist Movement. Its members have no part in determining its goals and are not permitted to voice dissent to party objectives. Unlike members of political parties, members of the Communist Party are recruited for indoctrination with respect to its objectives and methods, and are organized, instructed, and disciplined to carry into action slavishly the assignments given them by their heretical chieftains. Unlike political parties, the Communist Party acknowledges no constitutional or statutory limitations upon its conduct or upon that of its members. The Communist Party is relatively small numerically and gives scant indication of capacity over or ever to attain its ends by lawful political means. The peril inherent in its operation arises not from its members or not from its numbers, but from its failure to acknowledge any limitation as to the nature of its activities and its dedication to the proposition that the present constitutional government of the United States ultimately must be brought to ruin by any available means, including resort to force and violence. Holding that doctrine, its role as the agency of a hostile foreign power renders its existence a clear, present, and continuing danger to the security of the United States. It is the means whereby individuals are seduced into the service of World Communist Movement, trained to do its bidding, and directed and controlled in the conspiratorial performance of their revolutionary services. Therefore, the Communist Party should be outlawed. Title 50, Chapter 23, Subchapter Roman Numeral 4, Section 841, Findings and Declarations of Fact. The Congress finds and declares that the Communist Party of the United States, although purportedly a political party, is in fact an instrumentality of a conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States. How far into overthrowing the government of the United States is it? When the United Nations system is overwhelmingly communist run, you have the Treasury Department being the IMF now. The IRS are the revenuers for the International Monetary Fund. And then we're 13 years deep into Agenda 21. Something that most people have never even heard of. Dennis, as usual, done some superlative research. We've delved into, thanks to Sam and Trish and Dennis, the fact of the matter is that we're getting to the bottom of rewilding America. Road removal. The National Invasive Species Act of 1996, Public Law 104-332. You can see the co-sponsors of the National Invasive Species Act, October 1996. You can see the President signs National Invasive Species Act, implementation of the National Invasive Species Act of 1996. All that is here on the website, AmericanExpose.com. Here we see, dated April 13th, 2005, H.R. 1591, to amend the Non-Indigenous Aquatic Nuisance Prevention and Control Act of 1990 to reauthorize and improve that act. I see. And the bill to be enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled. This act may be cited as the National Aquatic Invasive Species Act of 2005. It's a big one, buddy. Congress finds that aquatic invasive species are second only to habitat destruction as a cause of permanent losses in biological diversity of aquatic ecosystems of the United States. Aquatic invasive species continue to be introduced into water of the United States at an unacceptable rate. Aquatic invasive species damage infrastructure, disrupt commerce, outcompete native species, reduce biodiversity, and threaten human health. The direct and indirect costs of aquatic invasive species to the economy of the United States amount to billions of dollars per year. Oh, really? Well, how about the loss of industry and jobs in America? How much does loss of that in billions of dollars is that? How come we're giving $82 billion to the war effort in Iraq and the Middle East when it is a UN operation? That's what needs to be concerned in your mind, that fact alone. The $82 billion for the UN system under the guise of the coalition. We are the global cop for the UN system. We have troops in 135 countries, according to certain sources. It is a set-up situation, and this invasive species law is really a boondoggle. And this is just a carryover from 1996, a carryover from 1992, the Rio Earth Summit, and a carryover from the past before that. It says the Great Lakes region, or in the Great Lakes region, approximately $3 trillion has been spent in the past 10 years to mitigate the damage caused by a single invasive species, the zebra mussel. Wetlands suffer compound impacts from terrestrial infestations, such as nutria, aquatic infestations such as hydrilla, and riparian infestations such as purple loosestrife. Prevention of aquatic invasive species is the most environmentally sound and cost-effective management approach because once established, aquatic invasive species are costly and sometimes impossible to control. Does this make any sense to us? As we have people suffering, we have homeless in the streets, we have jobs disappearing below the border and overseas, and they're concerned about invasive species. They're concerned about border region 21, which is now or which was border region 21, then border 21, now border 2012, which is the dropping of the borders. And yet we're worried about invasive species, and where's this money going to be coming from, and what is the money going to be utilized for? How do you control invasive species and endangered species, and how do you declare who's endangered and who's not? We are the endangered species, but we're supposed to be culled. We're supposed to be reduced in a population number. To be effective, the prevention, early detection, and control of and rapid response to aquatic invasive species should be coordinated regionally, nationally, and internationally. Well, naturally, we're part of the global COP for the UN system. We'll go do it all over the world, too. On our backs. Pathway management is the most promising approach to reducing unplanned introductions of aquatic invasive species. Constant national screening criteria are needed to evaluate the potential risk of non-indigenous aquatic species. Have we signed the Law of the Seas Convention yet? Is that a done deal yet? If it isn't, it will be. Not enough of us complained. Not enough publicity about it was presented to us. States and regions, UN word, regionalism. States and regions have unique vulnerabilities with respect to aquatic invasive species and unique means for addressing aquatic invasive species. Thank you. have 40 chapters of Agenda 21, totally controlling everything mankind does. One of the chapters deals with ecosystems and biodiversities. I don't have it in front of my eyes, but I'm centered on this public law, where it says a comprehensive research program which monitors pathways and ecosystems to detect the establishment and track the spread of invasive species, develop and demonstrate effective management and control methods, and monitor success of prevention and control efforts, is essential to accurate identification and management of high-risk pathways, and it is in the interest of the United States to undertake a comprehensive and thorough program to research, prevent, manage, and control introductions of aquatic species that may become invasive, and to coordinate that program to the extent possible with neighboring nations and efforts globally. Oh my. So the people are being herded into sustainable communities slowly but surely. The Global Fire Monitoring Center is a major contributor to that direction, in my opinion. The species are being maneuvered into sustainable communities as well. The only trouble is they're going to have land and more land and more land, and we're going to have less and less. We won't be able to own land. We're not supposed to own property. What happens when we don't pay our property taxes? We lose our property. We lose whatever equity we had in our property. That is communistic. But yet, the U.S. Code says there is a communist conspiracy in this country. But the media calls us conspiracy theorists. See, right now is the most opportunistic time to wake up the country. Everybody's feeling it in their pocketbooks. Everybody's feeling it in their paychecks. Everybody's feeling it at the pump. As a result of the high price at the pump, everything will skyrocket. Not so fast that everybody gets upset and uptight. It's very slow. It's a very slow means of implementation. This is why Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars is great information, and I would say documentation, although it can't be proven. Slowly but surely, the implementation continues. So this legislation continues. This act has the following definitions. They've got the administrator, which is the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. Aquatic ecosystems in the United States. The term aquatic ecosystems in the United States means freshwater, marine, and estuarine environments, including inland waters and wetlands located in waters of the United States. In other words, my little pond out here that's fed by a well is an aquatic ecosystem. Full of endangered species, listeners. Why? Because they've grown in this little pond over the years, and here they aren't indigenous to any other area, especially the turtles, which the former owner of this house said I should kill. Kill the turtles. Why? They eat the fish eggs. Well, shoot. I'm not one to be killing animals. I never really graduated to that degree of wanting to kill animals. I don't disagree with other people wanting to hunt and hunt for their food and eat their food that they hunt. I think that's fine. As time progresses, we're going to have less and less food to eat, and hunting will be outlawed as well. The mad cow disease scare and baloney that goes along with that. The food that they're eating, they're consuming. The fish in the sea are overfished, so we've got to stop that. We've got to curtail fishing in the oceans. That will happen. This legislation continues in, under the definition of ballast water, means any water with its suspended matter used to maintain the trim and stability of a vessel. They get into coastal voyage. Director means the director of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. Environmentally sound, when used in reference to any activity, refers to an activity that prevents or reduces introductions or controls infestations of aquatic invasive species in a manner that minimizes adverse effects on A, the structure and function of an ecosystem, and B, non-target organisms and ecosystems. The point is, we're losing jobs below the border and overseas. Labor products are coming back to this country. They talk about jobs. Well, this is the job that we're going to have, one of the series of jobs, is regulating and monitoring and moving invasive species, more than likely. It's a joke on us. This is a big, volumed piece of legislation. They talk about the term economic zone means an area comprised of A, the exclusive economic zone of the United States established by proclamation number 5030 dated March 10, 1983, and B, the equivalent zones of Canada and Mexico. And it gets into the Great Lakes. It gets on to so much. It's so involving. This is H.R. 1591 in the House. H.R. 1591, introduced April 13th of 2005 to amend the Non-Indigenous Aquatic Nuisance Prevention and Control Act of 1990 to reauthorize and improve that act. Oh, yeah. But the short title is the National Aquatic Invasive Species Act of 2005. Oh, really? Did we know about this? Did we understand this at all? Do we care? We should, but most don't. Those listening do, those not listening don't. And that is the sad commentary to have. That is mostly unfortunate. With that in mind, we see that in the implementation of the National Invasive Species Act of 1996 is on the website AmericanExpose.com from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. It's from the Federal Register, April 10th, 1998. In the summary, it says, to comply with the National Invasive Species Act of 1996, the Coast Guard proposes both regulations and voluntary guidelines to control the invasive or the invasion of aquatic nuisance species, ANS. There's plenty of information here on the website about this. Under the title of Background and Purpose of the Problem, non-indigenous or exotic aquatic nuisance species, ANS, are invading U.S. waters at a significant and increasing rate, causing serious environmental impacts, economic losses, and threats to public health. Is this really true? Why is it happening now and it never happened before? Or have there been species evolving all over the country, all over the world, throughout time? Although many non-indigenous species are benign, others have displaced or threatened the existence of native species. How do they know they're native species? Devastated commercial and recreational fish stocks, disrupted nutrient balances, and opened new pathways for the spread of pathogens and the bioaccumulation of toxic chemicals. Oh, really? Invasions of ANS, that's aquatic nuisance species, ANS, are a form of biological pollution that is quadrilatively different from any other form of pollution because ANS invaders can never be cleaned up or completely removed from an invaded ecosystem. Once established, the biological invaders continue to spread into new areas and cause further harm to native ecosystems. Is that right? Every successful invasion constitutes an irretrievable loss to our biological heritage. Oh, really? Do we really know and care? The nature and seriousness of the problem is well documented by several scientific studies. Oh, really? Including two conducted in North American aquatic ecosystems, the freshwater system of the Great Lakes and the salt and brackish water system of San Francisco Bay. Aquatic nuisance species invasions through ballast water are now recognized as a serious problem threatening global biological diversity and human health. Uh-huh. Well, maybe we should all be vaccinated for this. We don't want to have ANS invading our systems, do we? So let's have a vaccination. And obviously, you know I'm joking. But that is how ludicrous things have become today. We have our sons and daughters and fathers and mothers going off to war again in the Middle East. They're working for the UN system. We have jobs going below the border and overseas, industry leaving this country, so we can never build up a military if we had to, although there is a military-industrial complex. But how lucrative are they going to be in a war? We have, according to the U.S. Code, a communist conspiracy in the United States. And yet communism's dead. But we do have communitarianism. Amazing. Much more to go. We'll be back to wrap things up for the last half hour.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you? Who are you? That is the question and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then.
And welcome back to the broadcast called American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner. It's the 12th of May. Still the 12th of May, 2005. We continue to do the best we can to get you motivated to motivate others to understanding the big picture in place. The command and control structure in Agenda 21. Part of this is invasive species, Sam and Trish, Tim in Texas, Dennis Hodges, Darren. Everybody's doing their best to connect dots to what's going on. Aquatic nuisance species invasions through ballast water are now recognized as a serious problem threatening global biological diversity and human health. Limited control measures similar to these regulations and guidelines have been adopted in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Israel, Chile, the United Kingdom, Germany, Sweden, Brazil, and Japan. The International Maritime Organization, the IMO, Marine Environmental Protection Committee, MEPC, has issued the following voluntary guidelines, which is recommended be adopted by all maritime nations of the world. According to a recent review of the scientific literature conducted by the Marine Board of the National Research Council, the NRC, it has been estimated that in the 1990s, ballast water may transport over 3,000 species of animals and plants a day around the world. Well, so what? And there is evidence that the number of ballast-mediated introductions is steadily growing. More than 40 species have appeared in the Great Lakes since 1960. More than 50 have appeared in San Francisco Bay since 1970. So what, I say? You know, there's a food chain. There's a food chain that we can't do anything about. Eventually, we're going to be on the food chain because the lions and tigers and bears and wolves will be outside the cages looking in at us in the cages in sustainable communities, and we will be disarmed and unable to protect and defend ourselves. Because State Department Publication 7277 from 1961 says we will be disarmed. Public laws introduced and passed, or legislation introduced and laws passed, have made that a foregone conclusion. The move to disarm the publication or the population is well underway. When we're disarmed, oh boy, firearms are designed to defend the weak. Firearms are designed to put everyone on the same footing and threshold to control their own destinies. Firearms are important. The UN wants us totally disarmed. There's a handgun in the UN plaza. It's a revolver with a long barrel tied in a knot. That tells you what the UN wants to do with the world, completely disarm the world. Anywhere anyone is disarmed, any country that's disarmed, violence has incurred as a result. Genocide has incurred as a result. Crime rates in England, Canada, and Australia have skyrocketed since they have been disarmed. People are losing their ability to support themselves and sustain themselves. In response to this increasing threat to the United States, Congress enacted the Non-Indigenous Aquatic Nuisance Prevention and Control Act of 1990, Public Law 101-646 of November 29, 1990, and the National Invasive Species Act of 1996, NISA, Public Law 104-332, of October 26, 1996, both of which are codified at, get this people, 16 U.S. Code 4701 to 4751. That's it, people. Write it down, look it up for yourselves. That's 16 U.S. Code, 16 U.S.C. 4701, to 4751. There it is. Uh, Under the authority of the NANPCA, the U.S. Coast Guard promulgated mandatory regulations for ballast water entering the Great Lakes in 1993. This is very, very extensive information. It says here it's critical that the Coast Guard receives information from vessels on their ballast water management practices in order to determine if the voluntary guidelines need to become mandatory regulations. And yes, mandatory it will be. There's no doubt about it. And that's the problem. The Coast Guard proposes to amend its pollution regulations to implement the requirements of NISA, National Invasive Species Act. Specifically, subpart C of 33 CFR part 151 would be revised to incorporate the new requirements. These regulations would mandate reporting and record keeping so the Coast Guard can determine the level of participation in the voluntary ballast water exchange program. The mandatory ballast water management regulations in the Great Lakes and the Hudson River remain mostly unchanged, but will be revised to reflect a more appropriate performance standard for compliance based on operational experience and scientific study during the first 4 years. We propose two major additions to the current regulations. And where do we want to stop? You know, where do I want to stop with this information? I mean, how do they determine these directions? Why is it determined, and what is the point? Totalitarian control of everything we do. First, a voluntary ballast water management program is added for all vessels entering U.S. waters from outside the EEZ, other than those bound for the Great Lakes or Hudson River. This voluntary program would ask the masters of all vessels with ballast tanks to perform complete ballast water exchange at sea prior to entering U.S. waters. The second addition would be a mandatory reporting requirement for all vessels with ballast tanks entering U.S. waters from outside of the EEZ, if their voyage included a port or place, like foreign harbor or near shore waters beyond the EEZ. For the purpose of this rule, this would also include transits between Alaska or Hawaii. It goes on and on and on. And the point is, it's on the website, implementation of the National Invasive Species Act of 1996. Dennis did the work. That's all I've ever wanted to do with whatever I've done, is work together with people, having responsibilities, other responsibilities, so we make an impact on our country in restoring a constitutional republic which has been democratized on purpose. Democracy is the code word for communism. Title 50, Chapter 23, Subchapter Roman Numeral 4, Section 841, Findings and Declarations of Fact, Congress finds and declares that the Communist Party of the United States, although purportedly a political party, is in fact an instrumentality of a conspiracy to overthrow the government of the United States. Why is this in the U.S. Code, and why hasn't the Communist Party been outlawed? Because infiltration of Communist Party members in key positions of government. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. This is what it's all about. This is where we are. This is the system in place. We can't get to the bottom of much of it. Here we see U.S. Coast Guard issues final National Invasive Species Act implementation rule. On November 21st, 2001, the Coast Guard issued a final rule on the implementation of the National Invasive Species Act of 1996. This rule finalizes regulations for the Great Lakes ecosystem and voluntary ballast water management guidelines for all other waters of the United States, including mandatory reporting for nearly all vessels entering waters of the United States, originally published on May 17, 1999. Wasn't this making you feel very comfortable? But we're not the UN system, are we? Oh yeah, we sure are. We are the UN system. From the U.S. Department of State, the State Department, which implements the U.S. mission to the United Nations. dated August 12, 2003, Global Invasive Species Program, U.S. Contribution. The Global Invasive Species Program, the GISP, is designed to build international consensus and develop strategies to reduce the threat posed by invasive alien species. Invasive alien species from plants or animals from other countries and can spread rapidly, often replacing native species. Well, gee, I saw quite a while ago on the National Geographic Channel or one of those channels where a crocodile, and I've talked about this before, a crocodile was harming and creating havoc in an African town, a small backwoods African town. And so what happened? A wildlife relocator showed up, and they caught this alligator or crocodile, and they boxed him up. He escaped. They found another way to catch him, and they boxed him up again, and they shipped him 7,000 miles away to Florida to be relocated. So what constitutes an invasive species? What constitutes an endangered species, and how can you tell the difference? Sounds like man is trying to play God. Listen, we've had ships on the water for centuries. It hasn't made any difference with invasive species or non-invasive species, has it? How's it going to make any difference today? Remember the Global Invasive Species Program. As a GISP partner, the U.S. government supports and promotes international efforts to combat the spread of these species. The introduction and establishment of invasive species can have serious consequences for human health. Well, I'd like to know what. The environment and economic prosperity. I'd like to know the reasoning they have for this. Invasive alien species, such as the West Nile virus and zebra measles, are moving around the world into new regions where they can spread unchecked. I see. The West Nile virus is being blamed on invasive species. The global economic loss to agriculture, biodiversity, fisheries, forests, and industry caused by invasive species is in the billions of dollars annually, with the annual impact on the U.S. estimated more than $100 billion. Is this really a fact? Now, Dennis has done this tremendous research. I haven't. And like I say, this is what should be the way it is. Everybody getting involved, doing the right documenting to get us all on the same page. And incredible stuff here, listeners. I had no idea. I'm claiming honestly that I had no idea how far-reaching invasive species implementation has become. So the purpose of the initiative, I've covered that, resources, through its National Invasive Species Council, consisting of 11 USG agencies, that's U.S. government agencies and departments. The USG provides technical and financial assistance in support of GISP international activities to minimize the risk and impact of invasive alien species on human health, economic development, and the environment. Why are they so concerned about the human health? And they really aren't concerned about the human health, because they wouldn't be vaccinating the humans into cancer and disease. According to many, many sources, vaccinations are poison. And those that take vaccinations soon get sick and ill. This has been going on for a long, long time. And that is the problem. Partners, governments, Brazil, Costa Rica, Denmark, South Africa, Thailand, the United States, and Zambia. International organizations and agreements, Scientific Committee on Problems of the Environment, SCOPE. The IUCN, World Conservation Union, International Maritime Organization, International Plant Protection Convention, CAB International and the Convention on Biological Diversity, non-governmental organizations, the Nature Conservancy, Bishop Museum of Hawaii, National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and the Packard Foundation. Keep in mind, the Ford Foundation, way back when, ultimately wants to comfortably merge the United States with Russia. Rowan Gaither made that statement to Norman Dodd back in 1952, and Norman Dodd asked, well, why won't you tell the American people this? Oh, we wouldn't dare tell the American people this. The American people are the only blockade keeping the global communist conspiracy from being fully implemented. And the State Department is of no service to us in fighting communism, because more than likely the infiltration into the State Department of communist agents is well underway. In all government agencies is well underway. And that is the big, big problem. Partnership efforts to date through the GISP, the U.S. has sponsored regional workshops to bring together government officials and non-governmental experts to share information and develop strategies. What is that? A public-private partnership? The first U.S.-sponsored GISP regional workshop was held in Denmark for the Nordic-Baltic region in 2001. In May 2002, Estonia hosted a follow-up workshop, and participants produced a plan for a regional invasive alien species information network and inventory monitoring system for invasive alien species in the Baltic region. Five additional workshops were held during 2001 and 2002. Costa Rica for the Mesoamerican and Caribbean region, Brazil for the South American region, Zambia for the Southern Africa region. Africa is almost totally under communist control. Thailand for the South and Southeast Asia region, very close to democratizing into communism over there. The United States, Hawaii for the Australo-Pacific region. It goes on. Well done, Dennis. You can learn about the National Invasive Species Council. This information that I just passed on to you was August 12, 2003. Invasivespecies.gov is the gateway to federal efforts concerning invasive species. On this site, we will learn about the impacts of invasive species and the federal government's response, as well as read select specific or species profiles and find links to agencies and organizations dealing with invasive species issues. Invasivespecies.gov is also the website for the National Invasive Species Council, which coordinates a federal response to the problem. What is an invasive species? One, non-native or alien to the ecosystem under consideration, and two, whose introduction causes or is likely to cause economic or environmental harm or harm to human health. Executive Order number 13112 is the implementation of human rights treaties. 13112 is very close to that same date. So this had to have been done around December of 1998 under the Clinton administration. Invasivespecies.gov. See how the implementation of Al Gore and Bill Clinton continues to this day? And that is the very, very real problem that we have today. And I'm so sorry this is the way it is. And I'm so happy that other people are connecting the dots to what's happening. As we move to try and make a difference, as we move to understand the directions of Agenda 21, as we move to learn about the Global Fire Monitoring Center, we continue to learn more and more about the implementation of Agenda 21, the implementation of sustainable communities, the implementation of smart growth. We have the Wildland Fire Leadership Program on the website, AmericanExpose.com. The most essential element of successful wildland firefighting is competent and confident leadership. The Wildland Fire Leadership Development Program has been established to provide an avenue for you to improve essential leadership skills during all stages of your career. This website is designed to provide information regarding the implementation of the NWCG Wildland Fire Leadership Development Program. In addition, it provides a resource to allow individuals to strive for a higher performance level as a leader through self-directed learning opportunities. These are jobs being implemented under the UN system. This is a very gigantic site, and it's taking forever to load up. Point being that we learn more as time progresses. I've covered this before on the shortwave broadcast, but from Wildlands CPR, which is on the website, AmericanExpose.com, you learn about what is wildland road removal. Roads have both direct and indirect ecological effects on wildlands, and thanks for Trish for this. Thank you, Trish. Most notably, habitat destruction from road building and road-induced landslides. Other impacts include collisions, noise pollution, chemical pollution, and changes in wildlife behavior. Roads also fragment and isolate plant and animal populations, cause edge effects, and act as corridors for non-native species invasion. Roads directly impact aquatic ecosystems. Large amounts of sediment originating from roads reach streams and rivers, degrading habitat and impairing fish reproduction. Finally, roads fundamentally disrupt natural drainage patterns by diverting water and by preventing water infiltration into soil. The extreme result of this is massive road failure and landslides. Road removal and decommissioning involves taking roads out of service. This can be done by blocking access or by some combination of other road decommissioning techniques, such as removing culverts and unstable road shoulders, or full removal of roads by recontouring, restoring natural slopes, and revegetating. Road removal includes removing stream crossings, constructing crossroad drains, ripping road surfaces, recontouring road prisms, and outsloping. Removing roads is the best and most long-term solution to addressing the well-documented impacts of roads on wildland ecosystems. Road removal curtails adverse ecological and hydrological impacts, reduces impacts associated with motorized access, and saves money while creating jobs. Creating jobs. There you have it. And then you have the wildfire or the Wildland Fire Leadership Development Program, as I covered briefly, listeners. And you learn more and more as time progresses, don't you? The most successful element of successful wildland firefighting is competent and confident leadership. The Wildland Fire Leadership Development Program has been established to provide an avenue for you to improve essential leadership skills during all stages of your career, listeners. I'm just amazed at the information that showed up on my website today. Just amazed. The mission of the Wildland Fire Program is to promote cultural exchange in the workforce and to emphasize vital importance of leadership concepts in the wildland fire environment by providing educational and leadership development opportunities. Leadership or problems associated with this practice on the fire line has been cited as a factor contributing to wildland fire accidents for many years. The importance of leadership on fires has been echoed time and again. In recent years, the 1995 Findings from Human Factors Workshop, the 1998 Wildland Firefighting Safety Awareness Study, and the 2004 U.S. Fire Administration it's all there on the website. Check it out for yourselves, listeners. We're out of time. Be sure to listen to Darren Weeks in his excellent broadcast tomorrow night at this time slot. Darren is looking forward to having Dennis do the shot on Friday night. Fantastic work, gentlemen. We'll continue with this next week, and I'll be back Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. You've got the times. You know where I go. God bless you all, and please do your research at AmericanExpose.com.
Ready to be drafted for the war in Iraq? Dear class of 2003, they're always saying you want to rebel against authority. Well, let me give you a good reason to do so, to stay alive. I'm actually talking about justly resisting an abuse of authority. Guess who wants to pluck you out of the USA and send you to fight and die in a needless war? Why, it's Israel and the pro-Israeli individual.